This episode brought to you by
GTM AI Academy. Learn AI from a globally trusted resource, Coach K, Jonathan Carfort. Their bundle, Enablement AI Mastery, includes both the core Generative AI Foundations course and Enablement AI Mastery specifically. Each course has a value of $599 individually, but Coach K is offering them as a bundle with reduced pricing. And as a listener of the Inside Sales Enablement podcast, if you act now, you can use code ISE30 to get an additional 30% off of the entire thing. You will also receive free access to the GTM AI Tools demo library. Coach K has done the demos, so you don't have to, and offers his straight-shooting opinion, fact-based through an enablement lens. Go to www.gtmaiacademy.com and enter code ISE30 today and elevate your AI enablement game.
Welcome to the Inside Sales Enablement Podcast. Where has the profession been? Where is it now? And where is it heading? What does it mean to you, your company, other functions, the market? Find out here. Join the founding father of the sales enablement profession, Scott Santucci, and trailblazer Brian Lambert as they take you behind the scenes of the birth of an industry. The Inside Sales Enablement Podcast starts now.
Hi, this is Brian Lambert.
And this is Scott Santucci. And we're the Sales Enablement Insiders. Our podcast is dedicating to helping leaders ask the big questions they should consider in order to be successful with sales enablement. In this podcast, we rethink, reframe, revisit the sales enablement function and past ideas and best practices around the role to clarify so that you can take action, lead others, and ensure success for your company. Today, we have another special edition. On previous episode, our previous episode was well received. That was the episode where we did a trip report where Brian was at the Sales Enablement Soiree in Boston. Before I ask Brian to frame out our trip report and how we're going to do this, I do want to mention one exciting input. And I'm going to ask our listeners to share. So first and foremost, if you haven't reached out to Brian and I, send us a note and connect to us on LinkedIn. And I had a great correspondence with someone from our show, and she reached out and said, "Hey, I love your show. I love how raw it is." And I said, "Well, what's going on in your organization?" We got to chit-chatting. And we're exploring an idea of doing a show to put Brian and I on the hook to see whether or not we can give live feedback on this show without ever really meeting her to help navigate some of the challenges that she's got in her SaaS company. So I'm looking forward to that. What do you think of that, Brian?
I think it's great. And we might want to change the names to protect the innocent. Sounds
that's
fun.
Right. That's right. That's why I didn't say her name or anything like that. But in this episode, normally I'm the one who frames out the podcast. But this one, since I'm the one doing the trip report and I'm holding back on Brian about what to share, Brian, why don't you frame us out?
Yeah, sure. So everybody, I left Scott a message, and he had shared that he was going to Atlanta to have a big meeting around sales enablement strategy with some executives. So I called him and said, "Hey, you know, I'd like to hear about it." He didn't call me back. So then I finally got him on the phone later that evening, and I said, "I'd love to hear about it." And he said, "Well, why don't we do it on the show?" So I'm just as in the dark as you all are. And we're going to kind of take a look at what you did, Scott. And I'm really intrigued by it. So let me first ask you and make sure I understand what it was. And then I'd love to dive into what happened and what the outcomes were. How does that sound?
That makes perfect sense. It's always a good level set to start off with what you know.
Yeah. So you had said in preparation for this meeting that it was with the conference board, and you were in your role leading a council of sorts, and you had success throughout a series of meetings with the conference board members. And this one was an interesting one because, and you were pretty excited about it and got me excited about it because it was doing a deep dive on a specific challenge that one of the members has faced, including working together through a day and a half session, culminating in some sort of, I believe, executive readout to his executives that would be coming in cold to get the readout. Is that right? Do I have that right?
You do have it right. And I think I think what's helpful, at least this would be helpful for me, is ask a few, you know, get a few questions answered and level set. So question number one, what is the conference board? Question number two is, was the meeting with the conference board or was the meeting with the council? And question number three is, what the heck is the council anyway? What the heck are they doing? So let me go through those three questions. Question number one, what is the conference board? So I'm sharing this with you. I needed to know this information myself. I was recruited by the conference board. So the conference board to start up a sales enablement council. So what does that mean? What's a council? All that stuff. I didn't really know, and this is how I've processed that information. The conference board started 106 years ago. 106. And how it got its start was back in the Industrial Revolution, if you kind of remember your history, their labor and management didn't really get along. And if you're familiar with your European history, it led to lots of revolutions. And the industrialists here didn't think that was good for business. So what they decided to do was get some labor and some leaders from AT&T and GE and, you know, some other, you know, big companies like that. And they worked out labor challenges. And in this meeting, in this council that they formed, they created the 8-hour workday. No kidding. The 8-hour workday is an invention. It started out with the conference board. It's an American invention. You're welcome, France. And the 8-hour workday was the birth product, the very first result of the conference board. So since then, it's gotten companies together, multinational companies together, but it focuses exclusively on big companies, to solve complex problems. And they form these councils, and these councils are run in a very open way. We follow certain rules that we have, but each program director runs this. We are not paid well. it's a very part-time job, but that's basically what it is. So the conference board recruits the councils. The conference, the member, the program director, in this case myself, sets criteria for what it is that we're looking for, like what kind of type or diversity or, you know, things like that. They gather the members together and they start having meetings. And the members are responsible for it. So in a lot of ways, it's like a homeowners association. The builder starts it, but then turns it over to the members. And really my job is to facilitate or set the structure for it. So that's so far what is the conference board and what is a council. Is that clear so far?
Yeah, the only thing I would want you to clarify is, you know, you're talking 106 years old, you know, Industrial Revolution stuff, and it feels a little stodgy to me, but then we're talking sales enablement, right? So tell me a little bit about why they went into it. And then, as you said in one of your questions, to frame it out, who are some of these people that you're meeting with?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So the stodgy part is actually really interesting. So as you probably can imagine, I forgot another element of the conference board. The conference board also produces a lot of the consumer index data. So if you were to listen on Wall Street and when earnings calls come out and they talk about consumer confidence and things like that, the conference board does all of that data also. So they have a huge amount of economists, et cetera. And it's a nonprofit organization too. So it's a very unique, interesting thing. So back to the 100 years episode, the reason that I like that story is 100 years ago, we were going from we were transforming from an agricultural based way of thinking about how to run business to an industrial revolution. And we had a lot to work out about management science and, you know, span of control, responsibilities, and all those other things. And what's interesting is here we are at the cusp of the digital economy, and we're running into the same kinds of things. So there are, you know, 80 other councils that focus on things ranging from librarian tactics, literally, to CFO councils.
In the conference board,
literally. In the conference board, right? Okay. So they have all of these different little councils.
Gotcha.
And what happened was they started getting demand for, hey, what's this sales enablement stuff? We as big companies hear about it a lot. We're really unclear what that looks like. Let's set up a council for it. So what we did is, I was recruited for it. I'm pretty well known, in the space. And I said, I'd love to do that. That's right up my alley. And we recruited people for it. So basically I used a maturity model that assumed three different phases. Like phase one is, are you in a reactive state? Phase two, are you in a managed state? And phase three, are you in an adaptive state? And I had other criteria for it. We can talk about maturity models later. We recruited people in stage two that wanted to get to stage three.
So, okay, so you targeted that specifically. And so one, that implies that there are people in a managed state, which I'm glad to hear, or else you wouldn't have a council and you wouldn't have a meeting. So that's a win.
Yep.
For the profession. But before we go too much further, Scott, some of our loyal listeners and that have known us a long time might say something like, hey, you guys, you know, at Forrester, you had a council too. So are you just retreading the old council and, you know, redoing everything over again? And you know, are you guys going to advance this or what? What would you say to that?
Well, I would say that the economics, just everything about this is different. So Forrester, I think the fee to participate in the council was, you know, between $50,000 and $75,000 a year. And with that, you know, myself, you, our team, we produced research also and had these council meetings and had outputs. At the conference board, there are very lightweight deliverables. The fee is much, much, much less, between $10,000 and $15,000, depending upon, how many services the company has.
And if people mention your name, do they get a discount?
They have to get invited first.
It's invitation only.
It is invitation only. That's correct.
Yeah, gotcha.
So you have to invite, and you can go to the website and apply, and the application process happens, and I'm not part of that. I just get on the phone after they go through the vetting. I set up the criteria, and then the members vote.
Okay. So it's literally member run. You turn it. I like the homeowners association analogy. That's definitely makes sense now. And that's not how Forrester was run. And
nope. So
these are two different things. And almost, I would even say, I'm going to infer this. You can correct me if I'm wrong. There's two different problems to solve here. But Forrester was researched, definitional. Here, it sounds like this is for the members, by the members, and working on issues together for the good of, in this case, the profession.
Well, that's the interesting thing. Here's where the members are right now. Because of the progress that we've had three meetings. You have meetings basically once a quarter, not once a quarter, three times a year is basically how it's set up. And the meetings are 2 days long and they're facilitated. Every council's different. In our meeting, if you know me, there are no presentations. It's you maybe present a few slides, and then we get in, and I divide people up into teams, and then they read out to each other, and some people take the position this is the best idea ever, and some people take the position it's the worst idea ever, and we really embrace the idea of learning through conflict. So we've got some rules that we follow for culture and things like that. But what's fascinating is there is a divide within our community, within this community. And I would love to write up some reports, right? Because I would get some exposure there myself. but there is a contingent of our members who don't want anything published because the things that they're learning, they believe create competitive advantage for them. I'm not kidding. It's amazing. Other people are saying, look, what are we going to do to sell the value of our role if we're not communicating these? So part of the debate amongst the members is what to publish.
Yeah,
for our listeners, what I would do is anytime you see me post about a conference board thing, ask questions, because that's sort of an opportunity to poke at some things.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, I can see both sides, and actually being in positions where enablement is not a competitive advantage. I've been there, seen that, done that, worked that, helped people do it, you know. And then also on the strategic or more competitive advantage side, been involved in that too. Yeah, I mean, it can have an impact. So I can see both sides. And it comes down to what's the goal.
Right.
You know, what are they trying to do? And
I'll give you something that I can give away as long as I don't talk about the company. So there's one company in particular that their enablement function owns the technology roadmap. They own it completely. They built an alliance with the IT organization. They process, model, map out everything. And what they're finding is each time they roll out an iteration, it's a release. They don't think in terms of big chunks, it's a release. They gain market share. So what they now have is a very targeted roadmap going after very different pockets. And they encode, they codify the processes that they learn, the adoption programs that they learn, and they keep simplifying things. And each time they do an iteration, they gain market share.
This is internal technology, not for sale.
I just wanted
to clarify that. So what you're saying is
it is definitely technology that they are buying from the marketplace. The issue is how they're integrating it. So
most if they're integrating it and using it, they're not bringing it to market. So what you're saying is when they implement internally for the sales team and others, they're seeing a quantified impact, a positive impact is what you're saying. I just wanted to clarify that.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, thing number one that they do is they define an integrated process and they eliminate friction across organizational silos. They go in and they buy the technology parts, but they integrate those technology parts to work towards that business process that they defined.
Gotcha.
And then they roll out that integrated thing to that target, whether it be a sales channel or whatever. I mean, I got to be careful how much I share, whether it be a sales channel, whether it be a partner, you know, a partner class or whatever. And every single time that they've done any release, they've gained market share.
Well, that's cool. Mm-hmm. You know, if I were to be dropped on the planet from if I was an alien dropped on the planet and trying to learn the language enablement, you know, that would make sense to me. But the reason why I felt like I had to clarify it was after, you know, 10 to 15 years of working in the space.
Yeah.
There's just not that many people doing what you just said, but that's to me enablement.
And it is to them also. And what's interesting about this community is they find it very difficult to find stories of how people are applying, how people are integrating a variety of different strategies together to solve business problems rather than just doing stuff.
Mm.
So that's really the conversation. And what's also interesting is one of my requirements, I had two requirements. One requirement was I wanted to make sure that there was diversity of industry. So we wouldn't allow, I had quotas for how many different industry members could get in. So, you know, it wouldn't be tech industry heavy or.
Why was that important?
Well, what was important for me is as I've been as I was working, you know, as we know at Forrester, we started out tech industry, but then we dropped the tech industry part, and I started learning a lot from manufacturing, from financial services, from pharmaceuticals. Every industry has their one thing that they do really well. So for example, at manufacturing, working with an office furniture company, these guys are just really comfortable with the concept of value stream mapping, which is, let's follow the money, let's work backwards and eliminate it. So the idea of having the conversation of let's match the audience message messenger, let's look at value communications as a manufacturing process, was super easy. When I've tried to bring that idea into technology companies, the resistance is met was massive. They don't even let me finish sentences because they think it's too complicated. So it's an example of each industry has their own strengths. And the media industry, by the way, is way more advanced in terms of digital transformation than any other industry. Yeah. It's not even close.
Right.
Because they've been going through it since 1999.
Yeah.
So
and then software companies are really good at, you know, maybe, you know, making an idea concrete and being able to show you how that works.
Yes. And they tend to be better at analytics or metrics. Then the math or the healthcare companies tend to be really good at process, like
checklists and process makes sense.
A different kind of process. Mm-hmm. The distribution companies tend to be really, really embracing of technology, whereas other technology for sales enablement, whereas others are tend to be more resistant to
makes
it.
Makes sense. So if you're going to build a superhuman, cobble together a super function with different biases already and hardwired to view the world, it makes sense to have cross industry view. That's right.
So obviously you have a huge learning curve with language of getting, and the financial services guys are fantastic because, you know, when we talk about build a portfolio of revenue streams instead of, you know, as a new way of segmenting, they instantly get it. And they can't understand why people don't build charters or build a financial business case for them. They can't comprehend it. and they also don't see how it's hard, but you know, they're in financial services. They don't realize how close to this stuff they are.
Yeah, tell them to go build software. Go build some software and you'll see how hard this financial stuff is.
Exactly. Right, yeah. Right, exactly. So yeah. The things that the first two meetings that we had, most of it were learning. So I think the challenge here is to set what this meeting was about. What we learned was innovation is hard. Let's start there. And no one really has clarity about what sales enablement is. By the way, our membership has agreed that we're not going to try to define it. We don't really care what the definition is. Our council cares. What does the department look like and what is its business results? So the debate about what it is or isn't not really of interest to our members. The members want to say, let's define out a framework on how we're gonna be a shared service group that adds value inside their corporations. So that's a focus.
Makes sense. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Focus on the results and the impact. Yeah.
Yep. And what, you know, what's the scope and, you know, reporting structures and capabilities that need to be built out, operating models. These are the kinds of conversations. So what was interesting was we're innovating across the board, you know, innovating, like how do you define and set the scope of this role? And some of our members, the role works within marketing. Some of it reports to the COO. They're just all over the place. So
and that's fine too. You don't need to have an answer of where should this report into, which I know you and I have spent and probably tried to not answer for years. Seems like that's off the table too. It doesn't matter whatever the scope and remit is, report it into the best place to be successful.
Well, so not a single person cares where they report to, not one. What they care about is whether or not they have the resources, and they care about what their relationships are with other departments.
Yep.
Right. So
I can see that. Yeah, that's going to make or break them. And in the resource view, automatically you're implying, I imagine, you know, the executive buy-in, the proverbial, you know.
Well, it's funding yeah. account.
Right? Yeah, that's but you gotta have the executive buy-in to have the remit. So I know a lot of times we spend time talking about, you know, chartering and having top-down approval, et cetera. Well, if you can get the resource, that's what we mean.
Yes. So let's hold the note on chartering because we can talk about that in terms of the meeting. So that's what the council is. That's what it does. That's what the remit is. We'll talk about, you know, some of the representative companies that are in here. But one thing that I think is really interesting is what we found is so our last meeting was a pivotal one. It was at Tiffany's. So yes, I got to have breakfast at Tiffany's.
Nice. And
in our meeting, we had, I think we had a contingent of about 25% of the members came to me and said, we want to.
Hang on, I'm going to interrupt you real quick. I'm sorry. So one of the things that I've seen people do is say, oh, Tiffany's doesn't apply to me. And if you just said that, I would ask you to check your bias because I think that's important. I think, you know, and I saw this live at the recent event I was at, and people discount if it, you know, as is irrelevant. And that's, you know, I would just ask that we pause on that. So if you just did that when he said Tiffany's or you're hung up on that, you know, I encourage you to move beyond that. It's not applicable to your business. And let's dive into what the discussion was and what the results were, not where it happened. Just a little sidebar. Sorry about that.
Yeah. So if that's your concern, I would remind you that they sell multi-million dollar pieces of jewelry to the uber wealthy. If you don't think you can learn stuff about selling from that, then I don't know what you're thinking. The environment that they create for buying, the way that they do product introductions, the way that they work, the way that they retail, the way that they brand, how subculture everything is, how well they concentrate on or how much attention that they put on the attitudes and emotions of people,
the experience.
Yeah, oh my God, it's all about the experience.
It's
unbelievable how much attention to detail that they put on it. Yeah. Everybody was completely blown away by their operation. It is top notch. And the things that they're struggling with are different, but going back to this meeting at Tiffany's, so yes, I did have breakfast at Tiffany's. I want to stress that again.
Yeah, that's why you wanted to do this debrief live. You just wanted to say that live twice.
Exactly. So. Yep. We had about 25% of our members. So each individual member will say some things publicly, but of course say things different to me, right? As the program director. I guess either they don't feel comfortable bringing the issue up or they're trying to influence everybody else, but enough of them got together and said, we want to have a technology roadmap discussion. So, okay, we'll put that on the agenda. And they said, well, you don't sound too enthusiastic. I just think you're going to get, some pushback from other members. No. It's like, okay. And we put it out there and facilitated it, and about 3/4 of the other members just rejected it flat out. Why the hell are we talking about technology? How come we're not talking about business process? Another group was like, yeah, how come we're not talking about business drivers? It was really difficult. It took all my facilitation skills to navigate that because I said, okay, well, let's start with process then. And guess what? Three quarters said, no, you can't start with process because the technology people said you got to start with tech. Metric people said you got to start with metric. You know, the culture people said you got to call it. Okay, well, let's start with culture. 3/4 said no. I said, guys, how are we going to get anywhere? We have pockets of different groups. We've got to agree on something. So what can we agree on? That's going to be our assignment right now, because we cannot move forward if we're this dysfunctional.
At an impasse, basically.
Right.
No real consensus to work around.
We don't have any plurality to move forward.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do? And what I did is I drew up, I took a variety of different frameworks that I saw, ranging from, you know, books that people have or past frameworks that, you know, we've worked on at Forrester, or things that, you know, the technology vendor neutral technology stack, some stuff from, you know, Sears Decisions, Gartner. I put all those things on the wall, and I also put on the business within a business construct. And
that one's going to be a whole separate podcast. And but you might want to give a 15-second. What do you mean by business within a business?
Yeah. So basically, what that was this is a framework on how to think about your role. That you have investors, you have a core team, you have suppliers, you have customers, and then you have a support infrastructure. That's your technology, your legal, all those other things, and you are responsible for converting all of those things into value for those value for your targeted customers, so that you produce the results that the investors want. And figuring out who the investors are, those are the people who are funding your group, can be difficult. Figuring out who your suppliers are can be difficult. Figuring out who your customers are can be really difficult. Like, is it the end salespeople, or is it the sales managers? Is it sales leadership? And then what is the metric, the unit of value that you're delivering to them? Not easy questions, right? When you have
right.
kind of companies. So that what was great was the members agreed that unanimously that was going to be the framework moving forward. And all of the companies committed themselves to organizing their departments in that framework.
Well, that's great.
Yes.
And I can tell you, from my experience, that works. Is it easy? No. And you have a saying, you know, if anybody's seen Scott's LinkedIn, you know, sales is simple and simple is hard. And then I sometimes comment, you know, hard is doable. That framework or that construct of a business within a business totally works, but it's friggin' hard. And as any business is, I don't know if entrepreneurs out there that have started their own business, but it's I would equate it to that. And the risks in the scale here of these companies, which you haven't really told us about, but these, you know, Tiffany's and I know some of the others, these are big companies. So there's a lot at stake. And that's I just want to kind of draw that out and say, if they unanimously agreed to that, and I know it works personally, that's great.
And yeah, that was a great win. And that meeting was in February. And so the other thing that we realized when we reflected towards the end of the meeting said, how do we get there? Because that wasn't even on the agenda to talk like that. And what we realized was, you know, I said, part of my facilitation is always about what works. Let's concentrate on what works. Let's not concentrate on what doesn't work. And what we learned was the only times that we came to agreement was when all of the members were engaged in an experience, because there's just too many different English to English translation chart problems about the same topic. Like, you just take the word sales and everybody's going to have a completely different view of that.
Or value.
Right.
Discuss value. Or experience. Discuss.
What is sales enablement even, right? So yeah. we can't get anywhere that way. And then the second variable was, since all of this is new, Every human being has a go-to way of how they want to process information, right? First. So some people want to see an analogy first, and that helps them think about how to start that journey of understanding. Some people want to see data. Some people want to see a report, like a briefing.
Some people want to see a definition.
Yeah. Some people want, right, exactly. Some people want to see metrics. Some people want it, but we can't build all of those things just to get agreement to talking about it. So what we realized is the only way that we move forward is through experiences. And that then said, okay.
Well, so on that though, just to clarify, I think I know what you mean. It's a shared experience to produce something or do something together creates the understanding.
That's right.
Doing it together.
That's right.
So not an experience of, hey, let's go get coffee. Hey, we had an experience and listen to that live band. That was quite the experience. We're talking about solving a problem together, tackling, debating, wrestling it out, hashing it out, producing some sort of output together.
That's right. And specifically, not having all the answers.
Yeah. And whatever happens, whatever gets produced, we're cool with.
Right. So yeah. For example, yeah. one of the exercises that we did that was really illuminating is I had everybody go around the room and say, pitch your department to us. And then after everybody did it, I said, because we were in New York City, if I were a reporter, because look at the brands that are around this room. If I were a reporter and I were to go over to CNBC and get interviewed on 2 minutes and say, this group of people agreed on what sales enablement is, and it was blah. If I gave a summary of what I heard, what you guys all said, how would that come across? And it would have sounded awful. So then we broke people into teams, and I gave them a little bit of the business within a business framework. I just said, okay, what do you do? What services do you offer, and who do you offer them to? That's it, simple. And they had 10 minutes to do it, and we videoed outputs, and they were way better. And that shared experience of wrestling through it, not having enough time, filling through things, all those activities is what got everybody a shared experience.
Yeah, just had to do it, not analyze it, not, you know, what do you mean? And where's our scrum master? And let's have a proper kickoff, things like that. And I say that kind of tongue in cheek, right? But just go, engage and do it. Yeah, makes sense.
So what happened then was we realized that these were generic exercises, and we said, what if we had our next meeting where we took the real live issues of one of our members and just did it? Intercontinental Hotel Group offered to say, this is what we're going to do. So what we did in Atlanta is basically we had two bookends of the meeting. We were presented with Intercontinental Hotel Group's problems. And then we were to present out our findings to a team of three executives.
So whoever volunteered to do that, I want to buy them a drink.
I do too. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. So, hey, come to this meeting and we're going to tackle an issue. So one, you got to admit you have an issue, you know, 12-step program or whatever. Right. And then two, you know, you got to basically, because it's only the third meeting. So there's some sort of synergy happening there to be able to say, okay, I trust these people. We don't have to have all the answers here, but I trust them to work it. And then three, not only that, you know, I'm not just going to pat myself on the back and go home. I'm going to bring my executives in.
Right.
You know, that's some, wow.
A lot of risk. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we did an amazing job of establishing a culture, and we can talk about that later. You know, how you go about doing it. We have principles that we follow really diligently, and about other than that, it's pretty lightweight. But the principles are
those the same ones from the Sales Enablement Society or
derivative? No, they're adopted.
Adopted, yeah, okay.
But still, when you follow those principles, things work. Enforce them, things work.
Yeah, I agree with that too. So now, you know, this has taken a while, but I think this has been worth the trip. And, you know, here we are now in Atlanta, and you know, what happened?
Okay. So those are the bookends, and I'll summarize it this way. So our meeting, I put together a lot of effort to structure out this meeting. I made a video, pre-reads, all this other stuff. Cause we had 20 people there. We had members from Eaton, Waste Management, McGuire Financial Services, Ernst & Young, Cintas, Ecolabs, Microsoft, NTT, FM Global, Solvay, Cardinal Health, Eastman, Shaw Industrials. I mean, just such a broad mix.
Was Tiffany's there? I just want to make sure.
No, Tiffany's was not there.
Oh, all right. I was going to let you work in another one, like dinner at Tiffany's, but.
Well, that wouldn't be at, right? This is in Atlanta this time.
This is so, at IHG.
So these were all of the all the variables. And Brian, who is our sponsor, he first shared, and this is a great innovation. He went all in on the business within a business construct. And when we were talking and preparing for the meeting, he's like, I want to share my charter. I said, well, let's innovate a little bit. Why don't we call your charter your letter to shareholders?
Nice.
So we changed it around. We pulled up some annual reports and things like that. He actually talked to his investor relations folks, you know, to get some ideas on how to present it. He gave this readout and it was so amazing.
Did he have a big pen to sign it with?
No, it just had, they just had this, he just didn't call it a charter. He called it a letter of shares.
That's awesome.
It looked like a CEO's letter to shareholders.
Great idea.
The graphics for it, and it looked unbelievable, and everybody was blown away, and now everybody's going to adopt that. All of our members are going to adopt that, and we have somebody who's responsible for breaking it down, making a template for it, you know, and then he's going to interview Brian and I how we got there and all that stuff. So that was a monumental accomplishment. And of course, the financial services guys made some comments about, you know, some metrics that needed to be in it. nice. But overall, I mean, it was amazing. So yeah. given that clarity, it was really concrete. He also had his team come in and present what their value add is and how it contributed to the overall part. And that was really good too. So his
enablement team and so their value.
Right. So his enablement team, his scope includes sales operations. It includes, it's just giant. They're giant. He's got over 500 people.
In his enablement org.
Yeah.
So this is pretty cool because, you know, I've been in the recipient of tell me your value add. And then I've also asked my team to tell me their value add. And that's, you know, one, it's not easy. And two, it can be a little bit daunting. And so for him to pull that off as well and have his team do that, sort of clarity. Yeah, that's great. Great.
Yep. So that was great. And then what we ended up talking about, so we had four main topics that we were going to cover. We were going to cover the B2B value, what B2B value propositions are. And what's interesting is I made surveys for all of our members beforehand, and going into it, people were like, we know how to do B2B value propositions. Guess what? No one does. I mean, nobody knows because you don't know what to start from. Do you start from the product, or in this case, in the case of IHG, do you start from your property, or do you make it about like who's the actual buyer? Is it the consumer who spends, whose head is on the pillow, or is it the procurement group or the procurement group that decides to put them on the rate card? Who's actually the customer and what is the thing that you're selling?
Yeah.
We arrived at it's the experience, and no one could define what the experience was.
Yeah. Cause you said, okay, we have four things on the agenda and you say B2B value prop. And I'm like, the first thing, I kid you not, that went into my head was, that'll take 6 months and maybe not even produce anything. Cause I've been there and you guys are going to tackle that as one of four in a meeting. How the hell did you do that?
Yeah, well, we just got them to read out some feedback.
And okay.
Look, we have to present findings to the executives. We don't have time for debate. We just don't have time for pontificating.
Oh, because they're coming in later.
Yes.
Yeah, makes sense.
Coming in, we had our meeting started at 2:00 on Thursday or on Monday, and then the executives were coming in at 1:30 p.m. on Tuesday. We don't have time.
Yeah, don't have time. Let's net it out. Move it forward. Should have done the pre-work, whatever.
Yeah, if you didn't do the pre-work, you know, you were screwed. But luckily, everybody did the pre-work.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
They were prepared. They're executives, right? They're executives. That's how executives show up. So they did all the pre-work. And even then, it was hard because no one has a spec. No one has a definition for it. So this is the next thing that we talked about was the loyalty program. So how can IHG work on a loyalty program to inform the value propositions and drive more B2B sales? It's very difficult when most of the overwhelming majority of the people in the company have a B2C lens. They don't see the world through B2B, and it's difficult to explain what B2B sales actually is. Because it's tough because it's a mix of B2C and B2B, right? What is this thing? And then the third topic that we covered was we had loyalty, we had value props, and we had analytics. And so we sorted out like what kind of analytics were involved, et cetera. One interesting thing there was a discussion about how IHG needed to look at data scientists. And one of the financial services guys actually said, I don't really think that's a good use of time. And of course, when one of the financial services guys talks about analytics, people really listen, and they were shocked by that. And he gave a story about how they did all this analysis and they did all this analytics stuff on a market opportunity that they were so sure was going to win. And they started out like in 24th place in this market segment that they were going after. And with all the calculation, all the data, all the analysis that they did, they predicted by the end of the year, they'd be third. And that would be a huge upside, because going from 20th to third, look at our market capture, and that would be fantastic for their investors. It would be a fantastic win for the executives. What happened? They got to 18th. What they realized that they didn't do any job with was understanding the behavior of buyers and understanding the behavior of agents. And as cool as it sounded, at the end of the day, if people didn't change their behaviors, nothing was going to happen. And by behaviors, he's referring more to the behaviors. So I know we have some training people here. He doesn't mean the behaviors that you would see in terms of, training. He's talking about behaviors more like an economist would talk about behaviors. And it's really fascinating, because some people who in our membership brought up the training perspective. He's like, no, I don't mean that at all. I mean these kinds of behaviors. So he articulated when an economist looks at an economy, they look at two things, right? The motivation, the psychological motivation for somebody, and then the self-interest, the practical part. And both parts go into that coin. And what they said is, we've realized that we've over-rotated to the non-emotive side, and we haven't really concentrated enough on the emotive side. So that was a big, 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 big aha moment for everybody.
Yeah.
So then we said, we got into this point at the end of day one where no one was feeling good, which, by the way, is exactly the best thing to do is no one feeling good and confident on day one, because your brain works for you when you're asleep. And then, as you know, like how I like to facilitate these things is I ask people to share what their shower moments are. The things that are in their gut that just come out, and I ask them not to worry, paint a picture if you need to, just say what's in your heart. And we assembled all of these things and they became our Lego kit to assemble the solution for the executives, and things just started coming together. We learned, like the VP of sales and marketing from Solvay, it's a chemical company, was there, and he's got a very engineered background. So we learned his perspective, and then we took away a Microsoft approach to moving the ball forward without a clear North Star, attack the mountain. We've got a really amazing view of how to manage a portfolio of activities from E&Y that isn't about tasks. It's about objectives. So E&Y is moving a lot of their engagement models to be more design thinking oriented than classic management consulting. So they're learning at an accelerated rate. We learned from waste management, this really cool structure that they put together to link everything that they do to the vision of the company. And they have the CEO sign off on it. It was the CEO's idea. And they just make sure that everything is reinforcing that one cultural goal. So we put all those pieces together and we gave this amazing readout that I don't think I have permission really to share too much, because of how radically and innovative, but yet simple to execute it was for solving their problems.
Yeah. Well, I think, for this podcast, we've probably capped out our listeners anyway. This is a lot to digest. We're covering a lot of ground, and maybe one day we'll talk a little bit more about what the answer, kind of the outcome was. It wasn't probably the answer, because it's just the beginning, but the outcome itself. But if you had to give it a 30 seconds, tell us what happened with the executives and, what was the outcome, the final result of said meeting?
Well, I think the first part was since I did the readout, I asked them, I don't really know how you should take this feedback. I don't know has any of you ever heard of where you could get, I don't know if I mentioned this before, but every single one of these companies are potential buyers or potential customers for IHG, every single one. And one of our, the VP of sales and marketing, the guy from Solvay, did some math. He said, you know what's represented here? $500 billion of total revenue, 500,000 employees or potential travelers, and $5 billion of T&E spending.
Holy cow.
So given the size of opportunity, he said, there's your number right there. Just figure out how to sell to us.
And now every salesperson listening is going to go and tell their executive to go to the conference board so they can go to that meeting.
What was interesting though is it took them a while to digest that, because when you're in a B2C mindset, you think about markets.
Yeah.
Not how influential just a few people can be and how it sets up in huge buying networks. Which was another word that we talked about. An agreement or a buying network is different than personas and journeys. Like we tried to use personas and journeys, and it just, you know, didn't work. Those assets didn't work and help us solve our problems. As a matter of fact, they made things more obfuscated.
And I would venture to say that it's because of the business to business framework, which we need to do a deeper dive on. But you know, there's a relationship there because we've established that the business to business framework works. And when you say things like it doesn't work, it's because it doesn't have a logical home, if you will, in that framework, is what I'm inferring.
Well, this is different. It's the level of precision of what you have to message to is beyond the scope of just a persona. And it's interesting that when you generalize so that marketers or people in corporate can understand, what it does is it makes things fuzzy for the sellers to execute. Yeah. When you try to bring in too much detail for what the sellers need to execute, then it becomes too complicated for the people in corporate. So wrestling through the lens of reality of where the money actually really is versus where it is conceptually, that was a big struggle. I think the difficulty of providing this feedback is, I'm saying to the executives, first and foremost, I have no idea how to give a readout like this. I don't want you to expect a Bain or McKinsey type thing because, you know, number one, you're not paying us that amount of money. Number two, I got no skin on the game, right? For that, we're just giving you this kind of readout. And number three, you actually were Brian was able to persuade your buyers to get so engrossed in your own business problem that they came up with solutions themselves. And I'd like to share them with you, but I'm going to caution you, they might be really hard to understand because they're from a completely different perspective. And just the way that I set it up, they were like, wow. So they were so floored by the innovation of just what the readout was. They were excited. Then they struggled to try to comprehend what the feedback was because all of their data is very much just about their own little silo. And then you get into questions like, how in the world are we going to do that? Because we're not organized to take advantage of that. And they got a little nervous and said, look, there's a way to solve this. We just need to get creative. That's all. We don't need to say any one person needs to own it. We arrived at this answer together. If we can do this output, you can do this, right? And that was comforting for each of the other executives. Like, yeah, you're right. We could do this. So having them being able to pitch the other side of it and how valuable this sort of facilitated work backwards from what's possible kind of scenario, how empowering it really is. So the excitement level of the innovation was there in terms of a deliverable way to deliver insight. The findings were exciting and scary at the same time. Exciting because, wow, we have a huge opportunity to really move the needle. And then the next part was that created a lot of opportunity for Brian's team to offer a whole new class of service to the company. So it's going to help. Hopefully, it's going to help him elevate his function even further.
Yeah, and that's a good point. So, and I know we're over time, but I wanted this to play out. And but you know, you mentioned he has a 500 person org, and you know, I think a lot of times when you hear numbers like that, or you talk about people like that, you say, okay, well, this is it. This is the pinnacle, or whatever. And, you know, I think there's a bit of a bias, and I was talking to one of my colleagues about this, is, well, you know, in the L&D space, for example, it's all about, you know, how many people report to you, and, you know, the goal is to have more people reporting to you, and over time, the more people that report to you, you know, and eventually you reach to the top where you've reached your scope of everybody reporting to you, and now you're done, and you've had a great career, you know, and That's not what we're talking about here at all, right? We're talking about business impact and you know, innovation and customer experience and transformation and meeting, you know, I'm inferring, you know, the customer evolution. It's things like that, right?
And I think the metaphor to think about it would be within IHG, there was a fragmented market of many independent groups providing sales enablement services. And what Brian did is he's in an acquisition process of acquiring those functions so that they can stitch together and deliver more value to the company. I think that would be a better way to think of it. And
yeah.
When you start acquiring, you can offer more and more services. You have, you know, one throat to choke, so to speak. As long as you're designing it to where you're delivering value where it is, it becomes a strong, valuable thing. And no one looks at it territorially. I mean, no one, because he's inclusive. Yeah. And the like is just, it doesn't make sense to have, you know, seven different training departments, for example. Doesn't make sense. So consolidate it into one. Get rid of the redundancies, which is wasted money anyway. Repurpose those resources in the areas of weakness. Why do you have six different or four different analytic groups? That's not smart. Combine them. So the constant focus on this, look, we need to acquire these different parts because we can't get economies of scale if we have a variety of different little piece parts or fiefdoms everywhere.
Yeah.
Build U.S. Steel.
Yeah, I like that because it's top down and it's outside in. And my story I gave purposefully was, you know, bottom up, and how these perspectives, I think, kind of dominate the sales enablement discussion. But the conversation that you guys are having in a conference room, top down, outside in, is the business conversation that was unlocked through business within a business construct to the point where executives want to innovate.
Yes.
And I think everybody in the role wants to be there. And I would say, you know, challenge our listeners. What are you guys talking about? You know, and I went on a little bit of a soapbox earlier in this podcast, but I'll go on another one at the risk is, you know, hey, it's, you know, 10 o'clock at night and I can. So then we'll wrap up. But like, you know, sales is simple. Simple is hard, and hard is doable. And, you know, what Scott's outlining here, yeah, it takes brain power. I know one of the reasons why you didn't want to debrief right after Scott was because your brain was mush and you burned up all your brain cells doing something like this. This stuff's not easy. And so the idea of it's intellectual, you have to think about it, you have to be detailed. You know, this does not equate to quote unquote academic. This is listen to the numbers, folks. And yeah, okay, you know, this is the business side of enablement. And you know, you can't just wave your magic wand and get there. One, you got to do the work. Two, you can't just, you know, at the risk of turning off some listeners, you can't whine yourself there and whine and complain about it to get there either. You know, like, oh, I should have this and that. Fiefdom needs to be mine. And those people should be doing this. And those people should be doing that. That analytics group should be doing this. And, you know, I call it shooting on people. Don't shoot on people. And
yeah.
I have a saying, don't shoot on others. And it's tongue in cheek. And, you know, it's a policy. And I don't, there's a no shoulding rule. And so we can't should ourselves to the top, so to speak. And I know that's a little bit of a rant, but.
Well, that's fantastic. Rants are always great. That's what this podcast is for. I think that what's really fascinating is in the Charles Dickens and Living the Transformation Promise of Sales Enablement, we walk through my journey. And if you take away the colorful stories and all that other stuff and concentrate on what the process was, it's pretty much the identical process that Brian's following, or the identical process that some of the all the other leaders are following. Do the work first to figure out what the and baseline your performance. Identify what the opportunities are. Do the work, though, to build the spec of what the problem is and shop it. And take the time to shop it. I mean, it sounds like you're not making progress and not doing things, but that 3 months of time is the most invaluable time you can spend.
Yeah.
What you do is you frame the problem. You frame the issue. You show the interrelationships of things. You help people realize it's complicated. And because it's complicated, they give you the resource.
Yeah.
Because,
and then, you know, what are you going to do?
Complicate it out.
Yeah. And you know what? It is complicated. It is complex. And what are you going to build? What's, you know, to some people, you know, what's your legacy going to be? What's your impact? What do you want to do? Do you want to make the donuts and leave? Or do you want to, you know, transform? And, you know, can't just say you want to do it. You have to do the work. So if you're going to transform. So I think that's a great way to end it, Scott. And we've got other topics we're adding to the list. And you mentioned that person who might want to come on the show, my gut's telling me that some of these things that she might want to talk about on the podcast are related to this. And you know, driving out, being a leader, elevating, you know, all the things that we've been talking about through this podcast. And I think this is a great example here of what's possible. You know, I think when you look at what can we aspire to some people, this could be really exciting. To other people, it could be like, I'm not doing that. But at least you now know that this is possible, it's doable, and these conversations are happening. And that's why we're Inside Sales Enablement. So I appreciate that, Scott. And learned a lot, and I'm glad we held off on the debrief until now. And for all you listeners, you know, if I pissed you off on the rant, sorry about that.
You're allowed to. This is your podcast, buddy.
So, all right, we'll see you guys on the next one. And as always, send us a note, send us a LinkedIn, hit us up on InsideSE.com. Make sure you also grab the download there. That'll add you to a list, and we'll send you a note when we update. And appreciate all the time. We'll see you on the next one, everybody.
Thanks for joining us. To become an insider and amplify your journey, make sure you've subscribed to our show. If you have an idea for what Scott and Brian can cover in a future podcast, or have a story to share, please email them at engage@insidese.com. You can also connect with them online by going to insidese.com, following them on Twitter, or sending them a LinkedIn request.